I'm fine, Safi forced a smile. Really, it's just a bruised ego and some rain. But are you all right? How's your arm? Better?
Izzult's expression didn't budge, a good sign.
Turts, now that the painstone is dead?
She jiggled her wrist to show Safi the dull quartz.
But it's not as bad as before.
Nodding, Safi sank onto the mattress. Hay wuffed out the corners.
And how do you feel here?
She thumped her chest.
You were talking in your sleep. Was it the curse? Nothing so awful.
Izzult settled beside her.
It was just a nightmare, Saf.
Gingerly, Safi touched the bandage on Izzult's right arm.
Tell me what happened.
The lines on Izzult's face smoothed, and with her gaze fixed on some middle distance, she explained how, to escape the Blood Witch, she'd been forced to travel home. Her voice stayed flat and hollow as she went on to describe the settlement, the Curse Witch, the mob. Safi's gut turned harder. Harder still. Guilt stirred up her throat. For this was her fault. Like everything else that had gone wrong in the past 2 days, Izzult's near death was Safi's fault. And somehow the lack of inflection, the fact that Safi knew Izzult didn't blame her, only made it worse. Before Safi's lips could open and apologies scrape out, a smile flickered over Izzult's face. It was so at odds with the tale she'd just told. So startling, too.
I almost forgot. I have a gift for you.
Izzult plied a leather cord from her blouse and tugged it over her head. Safi's forehead crinkled, her thoughts and guilt swirling away.
Is this a threadstone? Yeah.
Izzult nudged her with her left elbow.
It's a ruby. But aren't threadstones for finding heart threads? Not necessarily. They can be used to find anyone in your thread family.
Izzult eased a second stone from her dirty blouse.
I have a match. See? Now, when either of us is in danger, the stones will light up. They'll dim the closer we get to each other. Well, bless me,
Safi breathed. The stone suddenly felt twice as heavy on her palm, twice as dazzling beneath the pink threads, and 1,000 times more valuable. The power to find Izzult wherever she was. The power to protect Izzult from the hell like she'd experienced last night. That was a gift indeed.
Where did you get these?
Izzult ignored the question.
That stone, she said, saved your life. It was how I found you north of Vinyatsa City.
North of Vinyatsa City, where Izzult had gotten the arrow punched through her arm by her own people. No wonder she didn't want to talk about it. Safi draped the cord around her neck.
I'm sorry, she said quietly. You'll never have to go back to the Midensis. Ever.
Izzult scratched her collarbone.
I know, but where will we go, Safi? I don't think we can go back to Vinyatsa City now. We'll go with the prince, to Leshna, so I can fulfill his contract. With the prince,
Izzult echoed. Though her face stayed smooth, there was the slightest tick in her nose.
And after Leshna.
Safi drummed her fingers on her knee. What could she say that would make Izzult smile? Where would her thread sister possibly feel safe again?
How about Saldonica?
She offered her goofiest grin.
We'd make great pirates.
Izzult didn't even ghost a smile back. Instead, her nose twitched more obviously and she glanced at her hands.
My mother is there. I don't want to see her.
Gods thrice, damn it. Of course Safi would pick a place where Gretcha would be. Before she could suggest other options, once that were guaranteed to make Isolde smile. The cabin door banged open. Evrain staggered in, with two sailors prodding her from behind. The monk slammed the door in their faces before stumbling for the girls, and Safi didn't miss how Isolde's spine erected, how her shoulders rolled properly back.
"Let me examine you,"
Evrain croaked, sinking onto the floor beside Safi.
"You're bruised, Domna."
"It's nothing,"
Safi tucked in her legs.
"The bruises might not hurt, but this isn't about you anymore."
Evrain threw a glance at the window. A moonlit shore streamed by.
"A bruise is spilled blood beneath the skin. We should not mock the contract's demands."
Safi eased out a long breath, her mind careening back to Merrick. The prince. The admiral. He was never far from her thoughts, and she'd barely thought of anything else for all those hours in the irons. She'd barely looked at anything but his rain-slicked hair and hard gaze while he steered the Janna toward his home. After Evrain seemed satisfied with Safi's health, she examined Isolde's arm, and Safi moved to the window to watch the approaching shore. Her muscles burned from the movement, from the strain of simply standing. She liked it, though. It kept away the cold, the thoughts of Merrick, the horrors of Isolde's tribe, and all the other things that were best ignored. There was little for Safi to see outside, though. Rock walls and spindrift misting the glass. If she craned her neck, she could just glimpse pale dawn skies.
"Where are we?"
she asked Evrain.
"A cove that belongs to the Nehar family,"
the monk answered.
"It has been a secret for centuries.
Until today."
Her tone was icy. And when Safi glanced back, she found the monk scowling as she wound a fresh bandage around Isolde's arm.
"The cove is inaccessible from land,"
Evrain went on,
"since cliffs surround it and there is only enough space for a single ship.
But," she tied off the clean linen with a satisfied nod,
"I think you will see it for yourself soon enough. The admiral plans to take us ashore. From here, we continue to Lejna on foot."
29. Merrick stood in Cullen's cabin, staring down at his thread brother. Cullen's face was gray, his knuckles massaging his breastbone as he watched Merrick from a low cot. Ryber had stuffed a sack of flour behind Cullen's back to prop up his head and lungs, so now white powder stuck to his hair and cheeks. With only the pale dawn to illuminate his face, he looked like a corpse. The cabin, however, looked very much alive. Cullen's single trunk beneath the window overflowed with his usual organized chaos, and there was no missing the clear trail of shirts and breeches that led to the bed.
"Too busy reading to fold up your uniform?"
Merrick asked, settling onto the edge of the cot.
"Ah, you caught me."
Cullen clapped shut a red leather book, The True Tale of the 12 Paladins.
"I can't resist rereading the epics. If I'm forced to stay in bed, I should be entertained."
He pitched a glance at the clothes on the floor, then winced.
"I suppose I did make a mess."
Merrick nodded absently and leaned onto his knees. He didn't care about the uniform. Cullen knew that.
"I shouldn't be gone more than half a week,"
Merrick said.
"Don't rush on my account."
Cullen flashed one of his frightening attempts at a smile, but it was almost instantly shattered by coughing. Once the attack had passed, Merrick went on.
"I'll go north to the estate and find Yoris. I don't think he'll mind Safiya, but he might make trouble over Isolde. He never liked the Matsis." "He also never liked your aunt."
Cullen hissed out a careful breath and leaned onto the flour sack.
I assume she'll join your little party. I doubt I can keep her away. Well, if Yoris gives you any trouble, tell him.
Cullen twirled a hand, and a current of cool air tickled over Merrick.
I'll crush him with a hurricane.
Merrick scowled at Cullen's display of power, but again, he held his silence. They'd argued for years over how often and how deeply Cullen tapped into his witchery. Merrick didn't want to leave on that note today.
Should I visit your mother while I'm inland?
Cullen shook his head.
I'll go once I'm better, if that's all right with you.
Of course. Take Ryber with you, just in case.
Cullen's eyebrows sprang high.
I'll tell Herman I've ordered it,
Merrick hastened to add.
Ryber knows how to help you in case of an attack, and the crew is aware that she knows. It's only logical she join you.
Besides,
Merrick frowned at his fingernails. There was flour and dirt beneath them.
I don't think it matters any more if the crew finds out about you. The Admiralty's over, Cullen. Lovatz won't answer, and it's looking more and more like Vivia spoke the truth about my father. I'm not surprised,
Cullen said quietly. Merrick grunted and picked at his thumbnail. This was another long-hashed point of disagreement. Cullen believed that Vivia's nature was spurred on by Seraphin, that the king wanted his children forever at odds. But Merrick considered that theory complete crap. For all of King Seraphin's failings, he wouldn't waste his energy on stirring trouble, particularly when Vivia instigated plenty of it on her own.
What I do know, Cullen, is that this grave is deep, and I still haven't dug us out. You can, though.
Cullen angled forward, flour puffing from the top of the sack. Were the situation any different, it would have made Merrick and Cullen laugh.
If you get to Lejna and you get your trade agreement, then it'll all work out. You're destined for greatness, Merrick. I still believe that.
Not much greatness. The trade will only be with one Kartoran estate out of hundreds. And I land here.
Merrick gestured to the window, a self-deprecating laugh stuck in his throat.
It's no better than a year ago. I don't know why I keep hoping, but I do. Every cursed time we come back, I hope it'll be alive again.
Cullen exhaled, a rattling sound that made Merrick sit up.
You're tired. I'll go.
Wait.
Cullen snagged Merrick's jacket sleeve, and the warmth in the air vanished again.
Promise me something.
Anything.
Promise me you'll consider a tumble in the sheets while you're away. You're so tense.
He gulped in air.
I can't even look at you without my lungs wanting to seize.
Merrick barked a laugh.
And here I was expecting something serious. I have plenty of reasons to be tense, you know.
Still,
Cullen waved wearily.
And with whom should I tumble, exactly? I don't see many women clambering for the position.
The Domna.
Now Merrick really laughed.
I am not tumbling with a Domna. Especially one who's betrothed to the Emperor of Kartora. Plus she makes my temper flare out of control. Every time I think it's smooth sailing, she'll say something offensive, and the squall returns.
Cullen choked, but when Merrick's eyes snapped to him with alarm, he found that Cullen was simply laughing, albeit wheezily.
That's not your temper, you big dolt. It's your magic responding to a woman like Noden intended. What the hell do you think happens to my witchery when Ryber and I...
I don't want to know.
Merrick flung up flat-palmed hands.
I really don't want to know. Fine, fine.
Cullen's laughter subsided, though a crooked grin stayed on his lips. and Merrick had to smother the urge to throttle his thread brother. This was not the conversation he'd come for, and he didn't want to leave Cullen on the thoroughly pointless topic of sheep tumbles. So Merrick forced himself to nod and smile.
"Give your mother my best, and if you need me, pound the windrum. We'll stay beside the coast most of the way to Lejna."
"Hi." Cullen's fist returned to his breastbone, and he nodded tiredly.
"Safe harbors, Merrick."
"Safe harbors," he answered, before marching from the room. Once he was topside, he shouted for Ryber to bring up the prisoners, and he made sure to call them prisoners. Not collateral, not passengers, simply prisoners. It made it easier to ignore Cullen's suggestions. He wouldn't look at Safiya. He wouldn't speak to her, and he certainly wouldn't think of her in that way. Then, when Merrick reached Lejna, he would leave her behind, and he would never, ever see her again. Isolde followed Safi, who followed Evrain, who followed Ryber, through the dark hold to the ladder. Two sailors glared at Isolde as she mounted the first rung. They muttered to themselves, their threads shivering with dislike. Safi, in typical Safi fashion, fixed a glare on the sailors and dragged a slow thumb across her neck. Their threads flared with gray fear. Isolde gritted her teeth, glancing at Evrain to see if she'd noticed. The monk hadn't, but still, Isolde would have to remind Safi, for the thousandth time, not to show that sort of aggression. Safi meant well, but her threats only brought more attention to Isolde's otherness. Only made Isolde more aware of the stares and the curses and the gray-gray threads. Usually Safi knew better than to raise her hackles so blatantly, but things were different now. Ever since her time in the leg irons, Safi's threads hadn't stopped beating with rusty guilt, golden shame, blue regret. Isolde had never seen anything like it from her thread sister. Had never known Safi could care so deeply about causing someone grief. Someone who wasn't Isolde, at least. Isolde and Safi reached the Janna's empty quarterdeck. Abruptly, Safi's threads flamed with new colors. Taupe horror. Blue sadness. It all wound within the guilt and shame and regret. At the foot of the cliffs spanning high over the Janna was a silent, gray-pebbled beach. Only the footsteps of sailors disrupted the rhythmic waves and wind. There was no chittering from swallows or laughter from raucous gulls. No pelicans to sit elegantly on the rocks. No shearwaters to glide by. The birds were there, but they weren't in any state to sing or fly. Crooked corpses and hollow skeletons covered the beach or floated on the gentle low-tide waves. There were hundreds of dead fish, too, washed ashore and crispy from the sun. How many thousands of corpses had gathered here over the years? How many more washed in each day? Isolde bent her gaze to Evrain, wondering how the monk felt seeing her home again. But Evrain's threads remained calm, and only a flicker of sadness twined through them. Isolde cleared her throat and swallowed the need to stammer.
"I thought it was the water that was poisonous, Monk Evrain, not the fish."
"But the fish," Evrain answered, moving to Isolde's other side. "Travel through the poisoned water and die. Then the birds eat them and die too."
Safi swayed against the bulwark, her face and threads a mask of horror. Isolde, however, stayed perfectly still, wishing she knew how to sculpt her face like Safi, wishing she could make Evrain understand that her lungs ached at the sight of this ruined land, that her ribs felt like ice-veined granite. Yet Isolde had no masks and no words, so she stayed locked in place. Threads flamed at the edge of her vision, and she didn't have to turn to know who strode up the companionway, who moved to Evrain's side and slid his spyglass from his jacket. The threads between Merrick and Safi were stronger now, and a confusing clash of contradictions. The outer strands, like a starfish's legs, reached and grabbed with purple hunger, burgundy passion, a hint of blue regret, and more than a little crimson rage.
This bond could get explosive,
Isolt thought, rubbing furiously at the bridge of her nose.
What is it?
Safi asked. Isolt flinched. She'd been so caught up in the threads, she hadn't noticed Safi turning toward her.
It's nothing,
Isolt murmured, even though she knew Safi would recognize the lie.
She has no shoes,
Evrain cried, snapping away Safi's attention. Merrick's nostrils flared, and though Safi's lips parted, likely to argue she was fine without shoes, Merrick roared,
Ryber, get the Domna some shoes.
The ship's girl popped up the companionway, chewing her lip.
I can get her boots, Admiral, but she'll need to come with me below decks. It's easier to bring her to the shoes than the other way around.
Do it,
Merrick waved dismissively, already focusing his spyglass to shore again. Safi glanced at Isolt.
Want to come? I'll stay.
If she joined Safi, then Safi might ply her with questions. Questions that could lead to the binding threads. Or worse, to the shadow voice in Isolt's nightmares.
I want to be outside, Isolt added. In the fresh air.
Safi wasn't buying it. She glanced at the nearest sailors, who scrambled up the masts. Then she dragged her skeptical gaze back to Isolt.
Are you sure? I'll be fine, Safi. You forget that I taught you the art of evisceration.
Safi scoffed, but her threads flared with amused pink.
Is that so, dear Fred sister? Have you already forgotten that it was me they called the Great Eviscerator back in Venyatsa City?
Safi flung a dramatic hand high as she twirled toward Ryber. Now Isolt didn't have to fake a grin.
Is that what you thought they said? She called. It was actually the Great Vociferator, Safi, because that mouth of yours is so big.
Safi paused at the companionway, just long enough to bite her thumb in Isolt's direction. Isolt bit her thumb right back. When she angled to the railing, she found Merrick with his eyebrows high and Evrain stifling a laugh. It pleased Isolt inordinately to see the monk amused, and warmth trickled through her shoulders.
It's good to see you feeling better, Evrain said. It's good to feel better,
Isolt answered, ransacking her brain for something clever to add. Or anything to add, for that matter. But nothing came, and an uncomfortable silence swept in with the breeze. Isolt started massaging her right elbow, just to have something to do. It caused Evrain's threads to flash green with concern.
Your arm hurts, and foolish me, I have left my salves below decks.
She hurried off, leaving Isolt with Merrick. Alone with Merrick. A prince who could become part of Safi's thread family, or just as easily become her enemy. A prince who now dictated where and how Isolt and Safi traveled. Without quite realizing what she did, a question popped from Isolt's mouth.
Are you married?
It was the first question thread witches asked when crafting a person's threadstones. And Isolt had heard Gretcha ask it 1,000 times growing up. Merrick's fingers tightened on the spyglass. His threads flashed with surprise.
No.
Do you have a lover?
Merrick wrenched down the glass, his threads now pulsing with revulsion.
I have no lover. Why are you asking?
Inwardly, Isolde sighed.
I'm not interested in you, Your Highness, so there's no need for the disdain. I'm simply trying to decide if we should follow you to Lejna or not.
If you should follow.
Merrick's threads and posture relaxed.
You have little choice.
And if you think that, then you severely underestimate Safi and me.
Merrick's cheeks and threads flashed an angry red. So Isolde decided to cut short the Thread Witch interrogation. But when Merrick spun on his heel to leave, Isolde did sidestep him.
You don't like me, she said, and you don't have to. Just remember that if you ever hurt Safia von Hastrel, then I will cut you to pieces, and I will feed you to the rats.
Merrick didn't reply, though he did look thoroughly incensed as he stamped around his ult toward the companionway. But the flash of cyan understanding in his threads told Isolde that he'd not only listened, but that he'd taken that warning to heart. Which was good, because she'd meant every word. Safi hunkered low in the gig, water splashing over the sides as Ryber rowed Safi, Isolde, Evrain, and Merrick ashore. When Ryber had taken Safi below decks, Safi had apologized for getting the girl in trouble, but Ryber had shrugged it off.
Admirals all growl and no bite. Besides, it isn't me he's mad at.
It was all too true. Merrick had barely looked at Safi since reaching the cove, and whenever she attempted a question,
are we traveling by foot? Do we have supplies?
He'd simply turned away, which of course made Safi all the more determined to elicit some response. She'd rather feel his growl or his bite than have him pretend she didn't exist. In mere minutes, the gig was ashore, and Ryber was hopping into knee-deep waves to drag in the boat. Merrick and Evrain hopped right out. Safi and Isolde, however, were considerably less graceful.
This is something Habim and Matthew failed to teach us, Isolde said, using Safi's and Ryber's hands to alight. We should inform them that gig exiting is a valuable life skill.
It's not that valuable, Ryber said. It's just getting in and out.
Safi coughed lightly.
That was Isolde's attempt at a joke. Oh,
Ryber chuckled.
Sorry. I've only met one thread witch before, and she was ancient. I guess you can see my threads right now. Hi,
Isolde answered.
They are currently green with curiosity.
A pleased smile split Ryber's face.
So, can you see my hot thread, too?
Isolde's nose wiggled, and she shot a quick, almost nervous glance at Safi before saying,
Hi. I can see it. He's on the ship.
Ryber's grin widened, though there was no missing the haunted, empty look that filled her eyes.
Ryber!
Merrick barked. The girl started, then marched earnestly toward her admiral. Safi leaned toward Isolde.
Why did you look at me when Ryber asked about her heart thread? Because it has blue in it, she said flatly. That means part of her love is grief-stricken.
Oh, Safi breathed. The idea of a shared sadness between Ryber and Cullen made her throat tighten. While Isolde slunk over the beach to join Evrain, who inspected a dead petrel several paces away, Safi waited for Merrick.
"Is the second mate," he told Ryber, whose braids bounced on the wind. "Kerman commands the ship until Cullen is better. And remember, don't eat the fish or drink the water. This isn't like the River Timets. Our water witches haven't made it here. You'll die before you've even swallowed. Also, make sure Herman doesn't push his witchery too hard. If Lovatz doesn't answer, then there's nothing we can do.
Ryber saluted, fists to heart, and Merrick rested his eyes on the ship. For several long moments, the seawater lapped at Safi's feet, at Ryber's boots. But she didn't skip away. She simply waited for the prince to finish his silent goodbye. Once he had finished, as marked by his sudden straightening and sudden collar tugging, he twirled around and stomped past Safi.
"Safe harbors!"
Ryber shouted after them.
"Safe harbors!"
Safi called back, already kicking after Merrick. Izzult moved in to step beside her, Evrain walking steadily behind, and with far more poise than Safi or Izzult displayed. The beaches around Vinyatsa City were sand, and Safi's ankles didn't appreciate this tiny gravel. She also quickly learned that vaulting over dead birds wasn't the easiest. When she turned toward Izzult to complain, though, she found her thread sister already panting.
"Are you all right? Should we slow?"
Izzult insisted she was fine. Then she lifted her voice.
"Where are we going, Your Highness? Because it looks like we're walking toward a wall."
Indeed, it did look like they were aiming toward two high cliffs that met in a low overhang dripping with stalactites. "A cave is hidden back there," Evrain answered, once it was clear Merrick had no intention of speaking. Though Safi was impressed with Izzult for trying. "It is meant to be a secret cave, though. Just as this inlet is meant to be secret."
"No one will see us," Merrick muttered, aiming for the rightmost edge of the overhang.
He ducked beneath a stalactite. Safi sank after him. Pinpricks of dawn shone through gaps in the craggy ceiling. The path before Safi, clearly hewn by men's hands, was so narrow she had to turn sideways. Several steps later, Merrick straightened, so Safi risked rising as well. No sharp rocks stabbed her head, though water dripped.
"Is this water poisoned?"
she asked, rubbing her hair.
"Not to the touch," Evrain answered, voice muffled by Izzult in front of her. "Most of the fresh water in this area is dangerous to drink, but there is some that remains pure no matter what."
Merrick gave a strangled groan.
"No one wants to hear about the origin wells."
"I want to hear about the wells," Safi countered.
"Me too,"
Izzult said, her breaths audibly shallow.
"I've read so much about them. Is it true that the water well can heal you?"
"It used to. All the wells could heal when they were still alive."
"Merrick!"
Evrain snapped.
"Slow down. Not all of us are familiar with this path, and not all of us are in perfect health."
Merrick slowed, though not by much. So Safi took it upon herself to shorten her stride. Once Merrick realized everyone was flagging, he would have no choice but to lag as well. Soon Safi's thighs burned, her ankles stretching as the path rose.
"There was an origin well on my family's lands," she offered,
once she felt certain Izzult was having no difficulty with the incline.
"It wasn't alive, though."
"No," Evrain said. "It wouldn't have been. There are only two intact wells left. Of the five, only the Aether Well at the Carowin Monastery and the Fire Well in Asmir still live. Their springs flow, the trees blossom year-round, and the waters can heal you. Though they say..."
"Stairs coming,"
Merrick barked. "That if the Carowin were to return, the other wells would regain their powers, and the springs would flow once more." As Safi squinted to see the slick steps that Merrick now vaulted up, she tried to recall the stories from her childhood.
"How many Carowins were there before the last pair died?"
"We estimate at least 90, Evrain said. "But we only have memory records for 40 pairs."
"Records,"
Merrick inserted dismissively.
"Don't make them real."
"Memory records," Evrain countered. make them inarguably real. A sight which sister transferred the memories directly from the Carawen's corpses.
Unless those memory records were faked, Aunt Evrain. Now, if you are done lecturing, we have to be quiet from here on.
But there's nowhere else to go, Safi said.
30 steps ahead, lit by a weak beam of sunlight, there was nothing but flat wall.
Good job, Prince.
He didn't rise to her jab, so Safi tiptoed behind until she and Merrick had both reached the wall, until Merrick was finally addressing her, the sun showing only the faintest lines of his face.
We have to push together, he whispered, leaning his shoulder against the wall, a hand pressing flat.
Safi mimicked his pose with her other shoulder.
One, Merrick mouthed. Two. Three.
Safi pushed. Merrick pushed. Then they pushed harder. And then harder again, and Safi hissed.
Nothing's happening.
Of course, as soon as the not very quiet words left her mouth, the wall lurched forward in a rush of air and sound. And Safi toppled into a world of dead trees and pale soil. Merrick fell too, but the idiot tried to catch himself, tried to grab hold of the swinging rock door, which just swung him around so that he fell on his back. Safi fell on top of him, chests colliding. Merrick oomphed, as did she, and emitted a pained moan.
What?
She demanded, trying to push off of him. Her hand was stuck beneath him, and each yank jostled her body against his. Heat flamed through her. She'd been close to Merrick yesterday, during their brawl, yet this felt different. She was all too aware of Merrick's shape, of the angle of his hip bones and the muscles in his back, muscles that her fingers insisted on digging into.
By accident. Completely by accident.
Safi was also keenly aware of Evrain laughing and Isolde gawping in a most unthreadwitch way. But before Safi could order them to help, Merrick rolled up his head and his stomach clenched against hers.
Get off me.
His growl rumbled through Safi's rib cage. Yet she had no chance to snarl back, for Evrain's chuckles broke off, and the sound of creaking wood reverberated through the clearing. 20 arrowheads peeked out from behind the sun-bleached pines, as Isolde murmured,
Oh, Safi, he did say to be quiet.
30. Merrick had expected the soldiers with bows. He really had. What he hadn't expected was that it would take so long for their leader, Master Huntsman Joris, to call them off. Or that Safiya von Hastrel would be on top of him while he waited. Isolde and Evrain, his aunt's hood pulled low, stood with their backs against the cave and their hands up. And Merrick did everything he could to pretend he wasn't pinned beneath Safiya, that his legs were not twined in hers, that his chest was not heaving against her much softer chest, and that those were not her nails scratching at his back, or her storm-blue eyes mere inches away. It was her eyes that always did it, that pulled the rage to the surface. But he wouldn't let his magic loose, no matter how much it ached for release, no matter how much he wanted to flip Safiya over and... Noden save him. A groan stirred in the back of Merrick's throat, and he prayed the earth would swallow him whole. Safiya mistook his distress for laughter.
Do you think this is funny? Because I'm not laughing, Prince.
Nor am I, he answered. And I told you to be quiet.
No, you told me to push. Which I did, except that you fell. Where was your wonderful wind witchery then?
I must have left it on board the Janna.
Abdomen tightening, he lifted his face close to hers.
right next to my patience for your constant harping. As long as he stayed angry, he wouldn't have to think about the shape of her mouth, the weight of her hips pressing into his. Her eyes thinned.
If you think this is harping, you're in for quite a treat.
Your Highness, a voice boomed. Is that the royal son of New Brevna I see cozying up to a lady? Lower your weapons, boys.
As one, the arrows in the forest dropped. Merrick immediately shoved Safiya off him and scrambled to his feet. As soon as Safiya was also upright, Izzult and Devrain moved in close, their stances defensive while Yoris's boys trickled out from the forest with their leader at the fore. Yoris was a lean man, with only 3 fingers on his left hand. Supposedly, he'd lost the others to a sea fox.
Matsy scum!
Yoris sucked his teeth in Izzult's direction, then he spat at her feet.
Go back to the void.
Izzult barely managed to grab Safiya before she lunged.
I'll show you the void, Safiya growled. You hell-rotting!
6 of Yoris's soldiers trained their bows on Safiya, and more arrowheads materialized from the dead pines. Merrick's hands shot up.
Call them off, Yoris.
This was not the happy reunion he'd hoped for with one of his childhood idols.
Arrows won't save your skin, Safiya muttered. I'll shred it with my... Enough!
Izzult snapped with more emotion than Merrick had ever heard.
His threats are harmless.
Safiya clamped her mouth shut at that, though she still moved in front of Izzult.
Lower your bows,
Merrick ordered, louder now, angrier.
I'm the Prince of New Brevna, Yoris, not some raider. But who's this, then?
Yoris tipped his head toward Evrain, who still had her cloak tugged low and body poised for action. At Yoris's nod, a soldier extended his bow and flicked back her hood.
Hello, Master Huntsman, she drawled.
You,
Yoris growled, shoving past Merrick.
The Nihar traitor. You aren't welcome here.
Evrain's sword rasped free at the exact moment that Merrick yanked out his cutlass and thrust it against the old man's back.
If you slander anyone else in my party, Master Yoris, I will run you through.
Merrick prodded the blade forward until Yoris's shirt wrinkled in. He'd had enough, and Yoris knew damned well how quickly the Nihar rage could escalate.
Evrain is a vizier of New Brevna and a sister to the king, so you will show her the respect she deserves. She abandoned her title when she became a
Merrick's boot connected with Yoris's knee. The man crumpled to the earth, and all around, arrows knocked. But Yoris only erupted with laughter, a sound like crunching stones. His head swung up.
Now there's the prince I know. I just had to check you weren't bewitched by the Matsy girl. That's all. That's all.
Another chuckle, and the master huntsman rolled easily to his feet. Bows and arrows lowered in a rustle of movement, and Yoris flourished a graceful bow.
Allow your humble servant to escort you to your new home.
No,
Merrick frowned, sheathing his cutlass. A sly grin spread over Yoris's face.
Noden smiled upon us this year, Highness, and only a fool ignores his gifts.
The morning sun beat down on Merrick, sent his shadow slivering behind him or into the sun-bleached pine stumps and dusty yellow earth. Safiya stayed 10 paces behind, keeping close to Izzult while Evrain brought up the rear. Merrick was relieved to find he could easily ignore the Domna, so long as she remained just out of earshot, just out of sight. And so long as she wasn't on top of him. He did glance back every few minutes, though, to make sure the women kept up. Though Isolde didn't complain and she didn't slow, she wasn't fully healed. Even with her face as blank as snow, there was no mistaking the tightness in her jaw. Then again, she'd looked comparably severe on the Janna when she'd struck Merrick with those strange questions. It was hard to ever tell what she felt, or if she felt at all. Fortunately for Isolde and Yvraine, Yoris's prejudiced guards had vanished into the silent woods during the first mile of their hike. And fortunately for Merrick, those same soldiers crawled within this ghost forest for thousands of acres. If Safiya decided to run, Yoris's men would be upon her in minutes. Merrick didn't expect Safiya to flee, though. Not with Isolde still healing. The group hiked onward, and the silent landscape never changed. On and on, it was an endless graveyard of splintered trees and sun-whitened trunks, bird corpses, and soil dry as bone. Whenever Merrick was here, he kept his voice low and head bowed. Yoris had no such impulse. He regaled Merrick, loudly, with updates on the men and women Merrick had grown up with. Men and women who'd once lived and worked on the Nehar estate. It would seem everyone had now moved to this new home with Yoris and his soldiers. Despite all the evidence, Merrick still caught himself hoping to find something alive. A flake of lichen, a scrub of moss. He would have taken anything so long as it was green. Yet it was just as he'd told Cullen. Nothing had changed. Moving east or west made no difference in a world of death and poison. When Yoris reached a fork in the path, the right road continuing along the Jadansi, while the left trail veered inland, an alarmed thought occurred to Merrick.
If everyone has moved, did Cullen's mother also go? He planned to visit her. Caril stayed at the estate, Yoris said, so Cull will find her exactly where he left her. She was the only one who wouldn't join us. Then again, this was never her home. She's still a Rithuanian at heart.
He unhitched a flask from his belt, head shaking as he marched down the left fork. Merrick followed, slowing his pace just enough to ensure Safiya, Isolde, and Yvraine also followed. They did.
Water?
Yoris asked.
Please.
Merrick's lips were like paper, his tongue like glue. It was as if the dryness of the world sucked the moisture from his very pores. But he was careful not to drink too much. Who knew how much purified water Yoris had these days?
This new place of yours, Merrick began, returning the flask, is clearly nowhere near the Nehar estate. Is it worth traveling so far? Aye, Yoris said with a sideways grin. But I won't tell you any more than that. I want you to see Noden's gift for yourself. The first time my old eyes beheld it, I cried like a babe. Cried?
Merrick echoed skeptically. He could no more imagine tears on the huntsman's face than he could imagine leaves on these oaks and pines. Yoris's three-fingered hand shot up.
I swear on Noden's coral throne that I cried and cried, Your Highness. Just you wait and see if you don't do the same.
Yoris's smile fell as quickly as it had come.
How's the king's health? We don't get much news around these parts, but I heard a few weeks ago that he was getting worse.
He's stable, was all Merrick said in return.
He's stable and ignoring Herman's calls and possibly rewarding Vivia for piracy.
In a burst of movement, Merrick shrugged off his coat and swiped sweat from his eyes. He was boiling. Suffocating. He wished he'd left the cursed jacket on the Janna. It was just a cruel joke. Each reflected beam off its gold-plated buttons, buttons he'd kept so meticulously polished, and that denoted his rank as leader of the Royal Navy, was like a flash of Vivia's grin. Joris and Merrick rounded a bend in the path, and the dead forest gave way to a barren hillside. Merrick's thighs burned within the first 10 steps, and his boots slipped too easily on the scree. He paused halfway up to blink sweat from his eyes and check on the women behind. Safiya met Merrick's eyes. Her lips parted, and she lifted one hand, fingers trilling with a wave. Merrick pretended not to see, and his gaze shifted to Isolde, whose jaw was set and attention fastened on the ground. Sweat poured down her face, and with her black thread witch gown, she looked dangerously overheated. Merrick's attention skipped at last to Yvraine. Like Merrick, she'd removed her cloak and held it bunched in one arm. He was pretty sure that was against the monastery's protocol, but he hardly blamed her. Just as Merrick's mouth opened to call for a short break, Yvraine's footsteps slowed. She said something inaudible and pointed east. Safiya and Isolde paused too, following Yvraine's finger. Then their faces eased into smiles. Merrick snapped his gaze left, only to catch his own lips relaxing. He'd been so focused on moving forward, he hadn't bothered to look east, to see the distant black peak silhouetted against the orange morning. With 2 ridges on either side, it looked like a fox head. It was the water well of the Witchlands, the origin well of Nubrevna. Centuries ago, it had been the pride of this nation, and the most powerful water witches had hailed from Nubrevna. But people had moved, and the well had died. Now, if any full water witches were left on the continent, they certainly weren't in Nubrevna.
"Hurry up, Highness!"
Joris called, splitting Merrick's thoughts and urging him forward. His heels slid on stones, his knees cracked. Then he was there, at the top, with his jaw sagging and his legs turning to mud. He had to grab Joris by the shoulder to stay upright. Green, green, and more green. The forest was alive. A great strand of it still breathed and burgeoned at the bottom of the hill, winding through a world of white and gray, hugging a river until... Merrick's eyes hit pastures with grazing sheep. Sheep! A laugh burbled in his throat. He blinked and blinked again. This was the land of his childhood. The jungle and the life and the movement... This was home.
"The river ain't tainted."
Joris pointed to the snaking stream in the forest, where birds, actual birds, swooped and dove.
"It goes right past our settlement there. Can you see it? It's that gap in the trees."
Merrick squinted until he spotted the opening in the woods, just south of the grazing cattle. In the clearing were flat roofs and a boat. An upside-down boat. Merrick fumbled out his spyglass and pushed it to his eye. Sure enough, the curved fat hull of some sun-bleached transport ship sat upside down at the center of the settlement.
"Where did this ship come from?"
he asked, incredulous. Before Joris could answer, footsteps gritted out behind Merrick. Heavy breaths, too. Then Safiya was beside him, gulping in air and shouting for Isolde to wait, that she'd be right back for her. Merrick's fingers curled around the spyglass. The Domna was disrupting everything, as she always did. He angled toward her, ready to demand peace. Except Safiya was smiling. "It's your home," she said softly, urgently. "Your god listened to you." Merrick's mouth went dry. The breeze, the rattle of branches, the crunch of Yvraine's and Isolde's feet. It all became a dull, distant roar. Safiya swung her face away, and her voice dropped to a whisper, almost as if she spoke to herself rather than to Merrick.
I can't believe it. But there it is. Your god actually listened.
That he did,
Yoris said. Merrick flinched. He'd forgotten Yoris was there. Forgotten that Evrain and Isolde were climbing up. Everything inside of him had been lost in Safiya's smile, in the truth of her words. Noden had listened.
That ship,
Yoris continued,
fell from the sky almost a year ago, somehow carried by a storm. She hit the earth with a shudder like you wouldn't believe, upside down, just as you see her, and with food bursting out the windows.
Merrick shook his head, forced his mind back to the present.
And what about the ship's sailors? There was no one on board,
Yoris answered.
There were signs of cleaving, though. A few black stains that we scrubbed away, and some damage on the hull that might have been Fox's, but that was it.
A cry sounded behind Merrick. He jerked around. Evrain had crested the hill, had seen the forests and the life. She crumpled to the earth, her palms hitting the dusty soil before Merrick could reach her. She just waved him off, a prayer tumbling off her tongue and tears pooling in her eyes, streaking down her dirty cheeks. Merrick's own eyes started to burn then, because this was what he'd worked for. What he and Evrain and Cullen and Yoris and everyone else from Merrick's childhood had worked for and sweated for and fought for.
How?
Evrain murmured, hugging her rumpled cloak to her chest and shaking her head.
How?
Despite Yoris's long-standing distrust for Evrain, his expression melted. Even he couldn't deny that Evrain Nihar loved this land.
The river's clean,
Yoris said, voice gruff but gentle.
We don't know why, but we only discovered that in the start of this new forest around it when we found the ship. Didn't take us long after to start a new settlement, and we have more families coming in every week.
Families. For a moment, Merrick wasn't sure what that word meant. Families. Women and children. Was such a thing possible? A new realization hit then, punching the breath from Merrick's lungs. If Yoris had created this in mere months, then what might happen with a steady supply of food? What more could be built and be grown? Merrick's fingers moved to his coat. To the agreement there. He glanced at Safiya. She met his gaze and grinned wider. And Merrick forgot how to breathe entirely. Then Safi shifted away to help Isolde climb the rest of the hill, and Merrick's lungs regained their function. His mind regained clarity. And after a sharp tug at his collar, he offered a hand to Evrain.
Come, Aunt. We're almost there.
Evrain dabbed at her cheek, smearing the dirt and tears more than wiping them away. Then she bared a tentative grin, as if she'd forgotten how to smile. Actually, Merrick couldn't remember the last time he'd seen his aunt smile.
We are not simply almost there, Merrick.
She took his hand and clambered to her feet.
My dear, dear nephew. We are almost home.
31. Noden's gift was easily the happiest village Safi had ever seen. She and Isolde followed Yoris, Merrick, and Evrain over a crude bridge, the river below a choppy slice in the yellow earth. It led to an outer cluster of wooden huts with rounded thatch roofs and plank walls, as bleached as the trees from which they were hewn. The home seemed awfully precarious to Safi, like the first big storm would bluster them all into the fast-moving river.